Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. You want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
No! The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
Yo.
The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
With the first overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1, yeah!
Welcome to Pass the Outlet, episode number 23. I'm your host, Michael Benjamin, joined as always by my wingman, Chris Patrick. Chris, how are you feeling tonight, my brother?
Feeling good, Mike. Glad to be back. I mean, the Suns are down, but Valley Sports Plug is up. I can't believe that this is the 23rd episode of Pass the Outlet. Feels like just yesterday we kicked this off. Man, time flies. But I know we got a good episode tonight, so I don't want to waste any time, Mike. But how are you doing, my brother?
I'm doing great, and you're right. Time flies when you're having fun. We got an awesome episode for everybody tonight. Suns traded for a big man, Nick Richards. We're going to break it down in the outlet point guard. We also got some late breaking news from the Phoenix Suns, making some trades for some draft picks. I'm sure we will touch on that in Reddit Reacts. But we're starting this one off with a really awesome special guest. We're going back to our roots, the YMCA days. We had to bring on my boss, if you really want to think about it, Colin McClintic, the Tempe YMCA sports director. He's going to join us today to talk about the awesome things that are happening at the YMCA, the new Junior Mercury Legacy League, and so much more. But without further ado, let's bring them on. Colin, how you doing, man? Appreciate your time. Appreciate you coming and joining us tonight. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great, man. I'm happy to be on the pod, and I was excited when you guys first invited me. And excited to talk some YMCA sports and some Mercury and the debacle that the Phoenix Suns are this season. So let's get into it.
The debacle might be getting a little bit crazier just within the next couple of days, I can only imagine. But let's start this one off right away. Colin, all right, man. We always have to start at the very beginning. So what was early life like for young Colin as one of the very few Arizona-born and bred kids, just like me and Chris Patrick over there, man?
No, yeah, like I was telling you guys earlier, a lot of my roots are – East Coast, Massachusetts, Nathan. My dad's from Ohio, my mom's from Massachusetts, and then, you know, they met in Boston 30 years ago, moved west. You know, I was born here, grew up on Phoenix sports. I remember those second or less Suns, going to those games. It's pretty full circle. I work at the Tempe Y, and we service this community, and I've lived in this community. I went to the same schools that we do childcare for, that we have basketball leagues for. So it's pretty cool to have that kind of full circle. And I know we're going to get into it a little bit more. It is interesting being born and bred. Like, we've had conversations at length about Arizona sports and kind of the support they have. I mean, I know you guys went to the Vikings-Rams game just last week, and the energy in there versus a home game for the Cardinals was a lot different, and it's just,
Yeah, so Colin, you know the struggle. It was a major transplant city, state, ton of out-of-towners. I mean, Mike and I went to the Washington Commanders game against the Cardinals, and it was – surprisingly mostly Commanders fans, of course. LA, ton of fans here, so it is kind of rare when we get to be in the company of other Valley natives here. It's funny, like at work everyone's from somewhere else, you know, you kind of end up being the outcast in your own state. And Mike and I obviously are both from here. We went to Corona, graduated there, and you graduated from Marcos Denisa. Do you have any rivalry memories during your time, or was that kind of past your time when all the Marcos Corona drama had happened?
No, honestly, I was in that. I think I was one of the last years where they stopped playing each other. I think it was my sophomore and junior year when we had one of the basketball games, the police presence, kids getting pepper sprayed. And I think after that incident, I think we didn't really play them too much. But I remember upperclassmen telling me about the football games, the football rivalries, the chants, the things that would be thrown on the field and things like that. It's it was your Ohio-Michigan rivalry, I guess you could say. So,
right in the backyard of Tempe. I will say I never partook in any of those shenanigans, Colin. I can't speak the same for Chris Patrick. But with that being said, we still have a lot of similarities, right? We went to school here in Tempe, different schools. But for you and me, man, we both have Boston ties. I mean, I can remember when the Red Sox won that first World Series in 2004. What a special moment it was. But screw that, man. We're talking about Arizona sports here. So I got to know, what's your favorite early Arizona, either professional or college sports memory that really is like the first thing that comes to mind when you think about sports here in Arizona?
I got a lot because I was pretty fortunate to go to a lot of Suns games. And but I would say, you said you threw college in there, and I'm going to say an ASU memory I got. So one of my mom's friends, her husband was he was one of the assistants for ASU's men's basketball team. And I remember being, I think, 10 years old or so, and going to the game and him bringing me in the locker room. And I have actually a poster I could probably send you a picture of. I still have it till this day, and they all signed it. And I just remember being in that locker room and like seeing the size of the guys and just how big, and like, I was like, oh wow, like this is what like real high level basketball is. And seeing it up close and personal just was like so cool as like an 8-10 year old kid. So that's probably one memory that sticks out for me. In particular, like I said, going to a lot of those Steve Nash, Amari, Sean Marion days. Yeah, like that was like the peak of like Suns basketball for me. Obviously, we're kind of all in that same generation of like, that's what we grew up on. So, you know, I missed those Barkley years. So that was kind of my Suns. And then, you know, then there was that period, the dark times in between. But yeah, that would probably be, that sticks out first in my mind. So.
Yeah, I'd say I'd probably share a lot of that same sentiment as far as those like 04, 05, 06 Suns with Steve Nash and Amari. It's just really cemented my fandom for the Suns, and kind of guys like us ended up sticking around during those dark days of Eric Bledsoe, and can't even name all the rest of the revolving door we had at that time. But, you know, you do work for the YMCA. Youth sports has kind of shaped us all. I played in Junior Suns. I think we all probably might have at some point. What are some of your first sports that you played? Do you have any specific memories from that time?
Yeah, so I think, you know, going all the way down to like, you know, 5-6 years old, I played in a rec league that my dad coached. He coached the team. We had little green t-shirts. We were the Bullfrogs. And then from there, as I got a little bit older, my mom signed me up for the Junior Suns. And actually at the Tempe Y, I sent a picture to Mike earlier of my membership card when I was a little pup here. And yeah, we played a lot of our games at the Mesa Y, which is no longer around. We played our games here. And I actually went the child care program here too. Oh man, see, pulling it up. Yep, see, there it is. 05. Oh, so, I should have my son's jersey on.
Yep, I remember the old card, so, man. Yeah, who do you know who that jersey was? Is that a Steve Nash jersey right there?
It's either a Nash or a Marion for sure. So Sean Marion was my guy. Quick story about Sean Marion. So my mom, she ran into him at like some Del Taco, some type of place like that. And she told me when she picked me up from school, and she said that she saw Sean Marion, and I was so devastated that she didn't like get a picture, or I mean, this is before smartphones, so like an autograph or something like that. And I just remember being like in the car just crying because she didn't get like an autograph from Sean Marion. Like, this is how deep my fandom was for the Suns at that point in my life. Like, it was, Suns were everything. So but circling back to like my days at the Junior Suns, we actually we were the third and fourth grade D2 runners up, so we got like a little silver medal. I actually have it on my desk. We got a trophy here that I make sure that everyone knows that I don't only just talk the talk, but I walk the walk. So but yeah, I mean, I think I maybe scored 4 points the whole season, but we're not going to get into the details of that. But we still made it to the game, so.
And that's all that matters. But, Colin, I mean, especially for somebody who grew up going to the Tempe Y, we all know that one of the first sports that everybody always plays is soccer. And I got the special picture to prove it for you as well right here. I think that's with my guys Andrew and Mark, if I'm not mistaken, man. This picture always kind of shocks me too, because I am 6'7", so I guess it made sense that I was going to be taller than most people. But did you play soccer? Was that your first sport that you ever did with the YMCA?
No, so I only did basketball through the Y. I played T-ball as well. And yeah, it was all YMCA basketball for me. I think that shirt is still floating around here somewhere too. That shirt you have on in that picture, I'm sure it's somewhere around here.
Yeah, I know Dave sent me a picture of it the other day and was like, oh, pulling from the archives, man. But okay, here's my other question I have for you. So you said you played basketball primarily when you were there. Did you ever practice inside the YMCA during your time in the leagues? Because I don't think I ever did, man.
That's so funny you bring that up, because like I'm thinking back on it, because obviously I got signed up at this Y, but I don't remember being in this gym that much. I remember being at parks, and I remember playing at like other Ys. But so it's so funny you brought that up, because yeah, I don't think I really ever practiced at this Y. I think everything was outside courts, and you know, that's what it was back then. So I wonder why.
Yeah, we'll have to track down who was the sports director back then and ask him why you guys didn't get any gym time. But, you know, you mentioned that you grew up in the area. You got signed up at the Tempe Y. Back in the day, I had also signed up at the Tempe Y. Sounds Mike probably did as well, I assume, geography, you know. So we all grew up there, and it's kind of – the building hasn't changed a whole lot. Do you have any early memories as you kind of walk the halls when you're on shift?
Yeah, I would say so. A little background. I was in our child care program until they asked me not to be a part of their child care program anymore. So I was what you would call a troubled youth, maybe. I walked down the halls and I look at our preschool classrooms, which were they were just after school program at the time. And I remember trading Pokemon cards. I remember being in the gym during like summer camp and, you know, just running around like crazy and just, And Rich Sloan, I remember Rich Sloan. Rich Sloan is, for anybody who knows the Tempe Y.
We all know Rich Sloan's Sloan, that's for sure.
Yep.
So.
Yeah, shout out Rich. It was crazy. Like when I'd been not going to the Y for a while and Mike brought me back in to coach, and then we were stopping by, I was like, Rich, you've been at the front desk since I was a kid, man. And he's like, I don't know if he actually remembered me or if he was just being nice. Rich is one of the nicest guys in the world, but still, anytime I walk in there, hey, Chris, how you doing? So shout out Rich for sure. Now, Colin, we're going to get into your why work as a sports director. What?
No, go ahead.
Okay, sorry about that. We want to talk about your coaching too a little bit. What's been some of the successes and maybe pitfalls during your time coaching with the Y?
Yeah, so I guess we'll run it back to my first season as a sports director, and that was the first time I had ever coached basketball before. So My dad, longtime basketball coach, coached college, did the IU camps, did the Duke camps with Coach K, Coach Knight. He's got some great stories with doing those camps back in like the 80s and 90s. And he coached me too. And when I started coaching, I kind of was, you know, fake it till you make it. I'd ask him a lot of questions. One of our mutual friends, Dennis Tolliver, who also has some YMCA ties, I would talk to him as well and get some advice about coaching and just kind of just soak it all up. I think the first season I started coaching was with Dennis as his assistant, coaching his son, which it's crazy to see, like, in just the short 2 years, how much these kids grow and develop, just skill, size. They just become young adults, and it's pretty cool to see. And then probably each season after that, I probably every other season I would end up coaching a team because I couldn't get a parent to volunteer their time. So I don't want the kids to miss out. So I would just end up coaching the team. This season in particular, I have my Mercury hat on. We have Junior Mercury League, and we have a team, fifth and sixth grade girls, that I was struggling to find a coach for. I ran the first couple practices. We had our first game this past Saturday. And it was probably the proudest I've been coaching at the Y, because these girls, we had six girls show up. They played their hearts out. They played a team that has been together for multiple seasons. All these girls, some of them, it's their first time playing, and they played their hearts out. And I think the final score was like 25-20 or something like that. And it was so awesome. So I'm going to continue to coach these girls the rest of the season just because of how touched I was by how much they care and how much effort they want to put into it and breathe life into me to breathe life back into them. So that's coaching. It's so rewarding. Every time I get done coaching, first person I usually call is my dad and just tell him, like, you're just on cloud nine. Cause there's so much to it. You know, it's exciting cause you get to be around the game that you love. You get to teach and see kids learn in real time. And I think that's so awesome. It just shows the impact that a coach can have. I know we say to our coaches, you know, you don't always remember the games when you're a kid. We talked about earlier about like some of my memories of when I played YMCAU sports, and I don't really remember the games. I don't really remember like the wins and the losses, but I remember like my coaches, I remember my teammates. And I think that's what youth sports is about, you know, using sports as a vehicle to kind of to teach life lessons and to build character. So it's so fun to coach. I know all of you guys, all of us here have coached at different age groups too. You know, I coached first, second grade practice. I've coached high school practice, you know, and you have a different impact. And I will say girls, though, Junior Mercury, the girls listen way better than any of the Junior Suns boys do. I will say that.
That is not hard to believe. I mean, as a previous sports director, I did the same thing. I had plenty of girls on our co-ed teams as well. I mean, Chris helped coach pretty much all the high school teams that I coached through the YMCA as well. And Chris could probably attest to every time we had a girl on the team, they were the ones who were always very keen, focused, listening to every little aspect and trying to, you know, stick to the attention to detail. But Colin, I think that's what a lot of people, at least, you know, who I have ran through throughout the YMCA, who have worked in sports as sports directors, have found themselves in coaching, and they always have this same kind of mentality. Like, I can talk about our guy Raymond, who I threw him to the fire with the pre-KK team, right? We got our guy Dennis Tolliver here now, who's the JV coach and the assistant varsity coach over at Marco Stanisa, your alma mater. We had to go support him. That was awesome to see as well. But it's a really close-knit community when it comes to the YMCA and the sports directors, all in all, if I could say that. But I got to know, man, now you've been at the helm for a couple of years now, man. But how did you first get the opportunity to become a sports director?
I needed a job first and foremost. I didn't really know what really I was going to go. You know, I went to community college, got my degree right at the kind of right when COVID started. So it was time to work, needed a job. And I did a couple different things. I did some, you know, something totally different, and was, this wasn't even on my radar. I mean, I've always said that I wanted to like coach basketball, but then, you know, I was looking for jobs. I was like, what do I like to do? Right. And I was like, sports. So there was a sports assistant position open. I applied. I met with Dennis Tolliver, who you just mentioned. He interviewed me, hired me as a sports assistant. I did some membership advisor stuff as to fill some hours. And then the timing just kind of lined up where, you know, Dennis was geared for his next position to where he moved up the chain, and then which in turn moved me up the ladder as well. And then I became the sports director, and, you know, haven't looked back since. Definitely been a lot, a long journey for sure. Definitely had some ups and downs of just, you know, learning the ins and outs of how to run a successful sports program. And I feel like we're in probably the best place that we've been as far as, you know, numbers and staff and just overall, like, you know, I feel I have my list of coaches here, and I think maybe 90% of my coaches are returning season after season, which I think, you know, says that we're putting out a good program. So, yeah.
That's really awesome. I love to see the continued success of the YMCA, especially being such a big part of my childhood and young adult life. But now that you've been the boss for a little while, a lot of people might not know what a sports director does. So as the sports director, what does your day-to-day kind of look like?
Yeah, it definitely varies day-to-day. As the sports director here, I oversee both our competitive volleyball, recreational volleyball, competitive basketball, recreation basketball, and then we have Club Voss, which is our club volleyball program, which I'm pretty proud of because both myself and Ariana Matos, who I don't know if anyone in the Tempe community knows, is in the volleyball community, but the Matos is, you know, they do a lot for the Tempe Y and for volleyball in general. Ariana coaches a lot of our volleyball team. She coaches our Club Voss team, so. And we're in like the heart of our season for that. So it's funny like that we have a break from our winter season to our fall season to our winter season in December. We don't have like pretty much any games or anything like that, but that's when our club volleyball stuff is like in full gear. So it's like people think I'm just chilling in the winter and the holiday time, but we have our club volleyball and then getting ready for our winter season, which started on the, you know, the first week of the year here. So as far as the day-to-day, you know, I come in, check my emails, check to see if there's any notes on my desk, you know, see parents, coaches. It's just a lot of relationship building at the end of the day, making sure that, you know, coaches are set up for success, answering any questions. You know, there's a scheduling element of it too, as far as scheduling the games, scheduling the staff, and just communicating, you know, throughout. I also help our childcare program. So I drive, you know, buses in the afternoon usually. And then, you know, I do have, yep. If you've worked at the Y, and you qualify, you're going to be driving a bus, but it's cool. It's full circle for me. Like I said earlier, it's, you know, I drop off and pick up kids from a school that I went to, Kyrene Del Norte, which I think is so cool. I think it's funny because I could never get to school on time, and then they want me to drop the kids off on time. But, you know, but yeah, as far as, you know, the day to day stuff, making sure, you know, that the gym, you know, the program is running as fluid as possible. So, you know, sometimes it's me running a practice, driving a bus, answering a phone call from a potential coach, or a coach has a question about this, or there's a scheduling issue, or, you know, making sure just all your T's are crossed, your I's are dotted, making sure background checks are done, making sure, you know, we have a annual campaign, which is something that the YMCA, since we're a nonprofit, we fundraise around this time. You know, it's there's a sports element of it called One Team, One Child. So recruiting people to help with that mission to raise money. That goes back into our programs, and the Y's motto is we don't turn anyone away for the inability to pay. So with that campaign and that fundraising, that money goes directly into a pot. Doesn't pay my salary, doesn't pay the light bill. It goes right back into the programs for the people that need it in the community, which I think is really cool. It's easy to show up to work when you know that you're doing a good thing and having an impact. And the longer I've been here, the more I see that impact take place each day. You know, it always surprises me. Like, I'll be driving the bus all week. The kids call me Mr. Bus Driver. And then, you know, the next week they're like having full conversations and Mr. Colin, blah, 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 this and that, or I'm in the gym and, you know, there's a kid that I've coached or I've done a clinic with and his coach has shown him something and he's over there waving at me. And I'm like, you know, pay attention to your coach. But no, it's really rewarding. That's why I stayed as long as I have. And yeah, we're really humming now. So.
Colin, you don't have to lie to the people. I know during the winter times, you're taking that cruise to the Bahamas and you're leaving everybody at the Y by themselves. No, that's not the truth. I mean, the truth of the matter is there's a lot of different intricacies that goes into running a successful program, even one that's been around as long as the YMCA has been, right? But you were talking a lot about impact and in different ways, but I got to talk about impact through this Junior Mercury Legacy League, man. I mean, it's just something that in my time, I never really dreamt of, and it's just been awesome to see, right? It was announced in July 2023 with the first season kicking off in January of last year, if I'm not mistaken. But can you kind of talk about the process of bringing that type of a league to the Valley of the Sun YMCA and what impact you've seen since the creation of this all-girls league, man? Because that's something that the YMCA has not had for very, very many years. Go for it. This is just the background graphic, my brother.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. I was like, I can't hear anything.
But there's Damien. Damien.
Honestly, like, yep. No, the Junior Mercury Legacy League is by far the coolest thing in my time here because of, one, the amount of time and effort and financial support that our partners with the Suns and the Mercury have put into it. You see this video. You know, we have kickoff events, we have wrap up events where we have, you know, higher ups of the YMCA. We have current and former players. We have Scorch the mascot. And it's just really cool for the whether these girls realize it or not, like this is like, you know, such an amazing experience, you know, that they're having. So, no, I could talk about, you know, the Junior Mercury Legacy League all night because I think it's so good that we're getting girls involved in basketball. I know, you know, this last year has kind of, you know, women's basketball is kind of having a moment with, you know, Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark and all these things. So, no, I love it. I think, you know, and we've expanded every season. So, you know, in 2024, when we started, you know, the Tempe YMCA didn't have any Junior Mercury Leagues. And then fast forward to this past season, I think we have 6 or 7 Junior Mercury teams just at our branch alone. So just to see it able to sustain and to grow, it's super exciting to me. And the fact that we offer, you know, first all the way to 8th grade, which was one of the big things that us as sports directors wanted to get to because there's such a drop off for middle school sports for girls, especially in basketball. So that way we're able to kind of fill that need, I think is great. And I just love watching this. I mean, I told you a little bit earlier about coaching this past Saturday, the Junior Mercury team. And it's so fun to see girls get excited and to learn the game of basketball. And yeah, I'm hoping we can sustain this and continue this, you know, for seasons to come. I know, like I said, I think last year we served like 1,000 girls over the course of 2024. And then just in the winter season, we've already served 530 something girls. So yeah, it's super exciting. And I can't wait to see where it goes from here. So.
No. Yeah. Wow. This is really cool. Honestly, I didn't know that a Junior Mercury League had been started, and just last year, I think you said. So I could see this really taking off, especially like you mentioned with Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese, really the boom in women's basketball that's happened, and I think is going to continue happening. There's a lot of talented young ladies in the college game as well that'll be making their way into the league soon. But Colin, Devin Booker's Starting Five Foundation helped mm-hmm. with the Junior Mercury League with scholarships and she donations. How vital has the partnership with Matt Ishbia and the Suns Mercury been in the success of this program?
Yeah, that's perfect, because I was going to actually mention that as well, because the reason we're able to grow this so rapidly is because of help from our partners and Devin Booker's foundation, because of being able to subsidize it, you know, so kids that, you know, girls that may have not been interested in playing basketball, but, you know, if it's free, you know, that kind of eliminates that barrier of cost. Right. So, I know Devin Booker's charities. I know he gives that money to different charities every year, and he chose, you know, our organization for as one of those. And then I know we've also gotten some money from our partners at the Mercury and the Suns. So, it's life-changing for some of these kids, right? You know, like, who knows who the next, you know, Caitlin Clark might be that comes out of our league. And it's so fun to see the buy-in from the families, the kids, the coaches. Quick story, last season we recruited the Seton Hall High School varsity coach. She's the most winningest girls basketball coach in Arizona history. And I just thought that was so cool that, you know, these seventh and eighth grade girls got an opportunity to kind of learn from her and, you know, continue to develop their games in basketball. So, I can't say, you know, more good things about it. I mean, I just love, you know, the whole woman empowerment behind it as well. You know, I think Woman Empowerment Day is in like 3 weeks, and I know the Mercury have something planned for that as well. So, I can't speak more highly about it. So.
I think that's really awesome. And to see the athletes, the former and current, being so actively involved as well, it's something I don't think that you really are, that at least I've been used to seeing in my lifetime. I mean, I'm sure there were events that happened, but you didn't really hear about it as much. So seeing this and hearing about it, knowing that it's only just getting started, is really exciting. Colin, I didn't want to derail from our serious conversation there, but I have to go back just a little bit. You mentioned, you know, growing up, we were all playing basketball, growing up in the Tempe Chandler area. Your dad was a coach and heavily involved in camps and stuff. So I got to know, did you ever attend a Sammy Duane Jr. Kiwanis summer basketball camp?
This is a big question, Colin. We have to know.
I did not, unfortunately.
Oh, wow.
Whoa, really?
I also did live on the west side probably till about, you know, third or fourth grade. And then when we moved to Tempe. So I remember doing father-son basketball camps with my dad, where talk about just a gold mine of good stories of my dad, who's probably one of the older dads there, killing himself trying to keep up with the younger dads, and we end up getting all the trophies. And some good stories with that. I gotta tell this father-son basketball camp story, or my dad will never forgive me. So
please.
I may have told Mike this before, but it's like I said, father-son camp. This got to be like June of like 2005, maybe, so like 20 years ago. And my dad, he's probably one of the older dads. And there was a Friday and a Saturday camp. So we had Friday night, we had a couple things, and they would do trophies for each event. So we'd have like one-on-one with the dads, one-on-one with the kids, two-on-two. We'd have free throw, we'd have different competitions, and me and my dad pretty much ran the camp. We got like, I think, four trophies each out of like the six that were given out. And but the last day, they do a scrimmage with all the kids. All the dads are in the other room, you know, getting ready for the trophy ceremonies and stuff. And we're scrimmaging, and this kid just kept fouling me all game. So I think when I scored on him, I may have said something to him to the effect of whatever an 8-year-old says as trash talk. And then next thing you know, we are coming to blows, and my dad tells it great because he's like, God, I hope that's not Colin. And sure enough, at the bottom of the pile, it's me. And it's great because right after this, we had the trophy ceremony where you could probably hear a pin drop. And my dad takes it upon himself to start the trophy ceremony by giving his trophy to the kid that I had punched in the face. Gave this whole speech about sportsmanship and how, you know, how hard this kid has played all weekend. And, you know, he loves his effort, and, you know, that's a big thing. So he gave his trophy to this kid. And then once the speech was finished, my dad came and sat down next to me, and the first words out of my mouth was, why did you give that kid your trophy? So I think the message was kind of lost on me of what he was trying to do. But yeah, that's probably my favorite basketball camp story. That, and there was a camp you mentioned about players, you know, support with our legacy league. I remember going to a camp and Diana Taurasi coming to one of our camps. And, you know, this is when the WNBA was still kind of, you know, up and coming, where it's like, I didn't know who Diana Taurasi was. I knew who Steve Nash was. I knew who Sean Marion was, but I didn't know who Diana Taurasi was. And I just remember one of the coaches saying, like, that's like the Michael Jordan of women's basketball. And I was like, I didn't even know it, because it's like, it was such in its infancy. So like to see it now where it's like, you know, people are going to games, people are watching it on TV, and it's like, it's such a bigger thing. I think that's also a testament to like the WNBA and its growth as well. So, yeah, I had to get that father-son basketball camp story in there.
That was perfect. Your dad, while you were on the bottom of the pile, he was like, hey, that was my son. Shout out, Charles. Thanks for joining us. Colin, had an awesome time chatting with you, man. I'm very, very proud of all the work and the legacy that you're continuing to grow over at the Tempe YMCA. Things couldn't be in better hands over there, man. You continue to grow the program. You continue to bring in these awesome programs, just like the Junior Mercury Legacy League, man. I cannot wait to see how that grows. I think you already said over 1,000 participants in 2024. I mean, 2,000 this year, 3,000 the next. Things are just really up and up for you, man. But our last question for the day, what's next for you, man? What's next in the world of basketball, the why, life? What's next for Colin McClintock?
Yeah, I mean, in the short term, I mean, as far as basketball, I know I bug you every Saturday about getting me on one of your men's league teams. So I think if I can get in shape, I got
to get. You got to come to runs. Hold on a second. You got to come out to runs first. All right. That's for both of you guys.
Touche.
You got to come out to runs.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then we can talk about putting together an adult league. But you got to start with the small steps first.
Yes. I know. It's just tough because it's like I'm here, you know, Tuesday through Saturday. And then do I want to come on my day off back to the Y? But I love the Y, but
I feel that.
I think it's waking up early too, but I gotta get in shape, and I want to get in some type of men's league at some point. So as far as basketball, as far as life, you know, I think, you know, I want to continue to grow myself here. I think I'm in a good space. You know, I think, you know, all of my leaders here, you know, are happy with what I'm doing, and I want to continue to exceed expectations and continue to grow here. You know, and then as far as like, you know, personally, you know, my girlfriend of 5 years, you know, we're going to be moving in together soon and kind of starting the next chapter of our life together. So I'm excited for that as well. Probably some wedding invitations maybe sooner than later. I don't know if she's watching or not, but
ooh, breaking news.
But
Breaking news.
But yeah, we definitely have to have Valley Sports Plug invite to the wedding for sure. So, but yeah, just continue to, you know, lead each day, you know, it's to make my, you know, my family proud, make my parents proud, make, you know, my, you know, just continue to be a good person and lead, you know, the right way. So
that's what it's about. Chris, you got anything else for Colin before we cut him loose tonight?
No, Mike, I think we've grilled him enough. We can let him get on with his night. But I just want to say thank you, Colin. Really appreciate you being on. It was an absolute pleasure, and hope you'll join us again in the future and we can talk some Suns or any of the other Valley sports that paint us.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, I definitely will be all for being on again to talk some Suns or Cardinals or the Arizona Cut. Oh, man, too soon.
Too soon.
Coyotes, sorry.
Too soon.
Yeah. But yeah, I appreciate you guys having me on. And yeah, look forward to being on in the future.
Awesome. Appreciate you calling. We'll see you next time, man.
Appreciate it, guys.
That was Colin McClintic, Tempe YMCA sports director for the past couple of years. It's been awesome to see the growth that he's made as a sports director over there, not only with Tempe, but as the YMCA as a whole. But Chris, I got to pop this one up here. It's not of you and me coaching, but it is of me and Greg coaching. Are you getting the itch yet, man? Are you ready? Are you ready to, are you ready to go back?
You know, Mike, as we're sitting here talking about it, I definitely would love to coach again. I would. Yeah, it might be time. Might be time here pretty soon. I think I could probably work out my schedule to some way where, because I might live here in the, I don't know if this is even East Valley. I might live out here in the boot of the valley, but I work in Chandler, not too far from the Y. So could be able to work my schedule out to make it make sense. So we'll talk. We'll talk shop behind the scenes.
Colin, if you're watching, Chris said tentatively he might be back. But yeah, I think it's about time. I mean, I'm almost at, I don't even know, year and a half now not coaching. So I'm getting the itch. I'm ready to get back. And especially after having conversations like this, talking about the impact you can make as a coach, man. It's so important for young kids to have those leaders to show them the way, not only how to play the game the right way, but how to be a leader and how to be a good person as well. But Chris, it's that time. We're rolling right into the outlet point guard today, and we have to talk about the newly acquired big man, Nick Richards of the Phoenix Suns. Phoenix Suns traded for Nick on January 15th. We got him and a second-round pick for Josh Okogie and 3 second-round picks. He's a 7-footer, 245 pounds, 27 years old in his fifth year from Kentucky. He was a second-round pick, the 42nd pick by New Orleans in the 2020 draft, but last three seasons, including this year, he averaged about 9 points per game and 7.7 rebounds in just about 21 minutes. And this year in 21 games for the Hornets, he started 9 games, but it's a very, very short sample size, only 2 games since the trade to the Phoenix Suns. But I would say it's been a good start. 12.5 points, 7.5 rebounds, shooting 75% from the field. And Chris, as we dive into this, I'm just going to throw these clips up and we'll start getting into them. But I mean, he had an absolutely stellar first game in that win in Detroit. 21 points, 11 rebounds, and a steal. I think he shot about 75% from the field that game as well. But man, this is what the Phoenix Suns needed, right? Somebody who can give them second chance opportunities, somebody who's a little bit more athletic inside, who can catch that lob a little bit more consistently than guys like Mason Plumlee, and definitely Jusuf Nurkić. But those second chance opportunities are what are king right now, what we're seeing from Richards. But Chris, I mean, what are you seeing so far from the start from the big man?
I honestly think he's really, you know, blending. He's coming into this team and assimilating quickly. I think something that stands out to me immediately from what I've heard on the chatter and also what I've seen here in these clips so far is this dude actually dunks the ball. And that's what we were begging DeAndre Ayton to do. And I'm not saying DeAndre Ayton couldn't dunk or never did, but it was those easy, like, offense offensive rebounds, put it right back up. Ayton always tried to be finesse. Nurkic, I don't really even have much to say about Nurkic, man. He's never that dude. Mike, if you ask a Suns fan, Nick might be our savior. If you ask a Hornets fan, they might say good riddance. So I'm cautiously optimistic, but I really like what I see so far. It looks like he's a team player. Looks like he's a pretty smart basketball player. And with that size and that height, he's going to be able to put it to work.
Cautiously optimistic. That was Chris's key to the season start and hasn't been going our way. But I got to go pull this one back to the top, Chris. The second chance opportunities is what I think is a big factor in making this trade for Nick Richards. Obviously, 7-footer, you're going to have those better rebounding opportunities, but being able to get that second chance opportunity to kick it out to Ryan Dunn, who's been shooting a little bit better from outside. But yeah, just cleaning up the little messes. KD misses that inside bunny, but there's Nick to finish it up and two-hand slam it, like you said. On this play, I will say through the roll, I would have liked Ryan Dunn to throw the lob there on the back end and see if Nick can actually go and attack it and jam that one down. But you also have to remember, this is the very first game that he was playing for the team. So that kind of rhythm takes time. But man, yeah, down the stretch, you know, last 5 minutes, he was making a key impact. He had some big buckets right at the rim, which is where he needs to live. And I like the point that you do bring up about the Hornets, because we're going to roll it on a little bit longer here as he gets past this nice, you know, run rim on the fast break, sets Grayson this little short screen right there, but he's in the dunker position, which is big. But these last couple of clips, Chris, is where I think he's going to need to continue to grow his game. As still a younger guy, right? 27 years old, but it is his fifth year. He has to work on his aggressiveness on the defensive glass a little bit. And he has to work on his pick and roll defense, because from what I was seeing, especially in this Cavaliers game where the Suns got smoked, he was struggling on deciding when to step up off of the drive or to hedge a little bit more. It just seemed like he was leaning back way too often. But we can get into the negatives in a second. Chris, was there anything else that you were liking from the first two games that you were seeing from Nick Richards, man?
You know, honestly, not too much that I haven't already mentioned, just due to the small sample size, I think. But him being a young guy helps quite a bit as well. I mean, I know that's been one of our major criticisms, is that with the moves to get Durant and Beal and some of these other guys, it makes our team older, a little bit slower. You know, again, not to get bogged down in the negative, we thought that this team was going to be built to basically get into shootouts with teams and the defense would take a secondary priority. But now we're seeing that we might not have the caliber of offense that we thought we did. So we do need to tighten it up on defense. So you make a really good point. I like what he's doing offensively, and that looks great in the highlights. But then if you watch the game wire to wire, those defensive errors will start to stand out. Again, willing to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe it's just, you know, some jitters of just being on the team, trying to find his spot on the court, get into a new system. So the time will tell, but Mike, we're running out of time. So he's going to have to figure it out quick.
We're running out of time for this year, Chris. And I'm very interested after today's moves, which we're going to get into, what the short-term future looks like for the Phoenix Suns. But yeah, I mean, the truth of the matter, one of my favorite sayings is this kid is going to be given a hell of a lot of opportunities, because it already seems like Yusuf Nurkic is being kind of folded out of the lineup. We needed to get younger at the position just because Mason Plumlee is a little bit limited in what he can do laterally. And I mean, he's a big body, but going up against guys like Jared Allen, you know, somebody who is consistently within the NBA Defensive Player of the Year talks, somebody who has been in the league for so long and knows his role and knows that capitalizing on those second chance opportunities is where he gets his big money at. That's something that Nick Richards is going to have to grow into, especially within a team that is so heavy, top heavy, with all these guys who can score 20 plus points a game. He's going to have to find out where he sticks in. And right now, what we're going to have to ask him to do is play very, very aggressive defense, rebound the basketball on both ends, and find his bunnies when he does get his small opportunities, his short amount of opportunities, because you know the offensive sets are still going to be dominated by Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, and for right now, Bradley Beal. But Chris, anything else on Nick Richards, man? I think it was a great move for what they had to give up, and it was a glaring weakness that we were seeing from the first half of the season from the Phoenix Suns. So I'm all two thumbs up, even after a struggle of a game that he did have against the Cleveland Cavaliers. But what would you give this trade grade so far, even just through two games?
You know, so far, I'm going to be nice, Mike. I'd give it a B. B? Yeah. I'd give it a B. You know, is he going to be our savior and be the guy that turns our season around? No. But nobody expects him to be. I think he's going to be a nice piece. He's going to get a lot of minutes based on how this roster is currently constructed. I think in a week or two, this roster could be constructed quite a bit differently too. So he's going to have to learn to be flexible, do what's asked of him. And so far, looks like he's stepping up to the task. I'm really curious to see what he's able to do. But yeah, I'll give it a B, and I like the move.
Early grade B, I'll stick with that too, Chris. But I think that is a perfect transition into Reddit Reacts, man. So if you're ready to go, I think I'm ready to go, man. What do you got on the docket first?
Yeah, man, let's do it. This is Reddit Reacts, where I scour the app known as Reddit. It's full of trolls and memers, and we love them to death over at r/Suns. They welcome us with open arms and are never critical of our takes. Sometimes we have to kind of hop over to x/Twitter and get some content over there when the Suns subreddit is lacking. But we are right in the heart of the season, so you know those boys over there, r/Suns, are active. So I pulled a few gems, got a few others, you know, some fun stuff. You know, I don't want it to be all doom and gloom. It's been a bit of a bummer of a season. So, you know, we can laugh. We can laugh through the pain, though. Mike, I got this first. And ladies and gentlemen, Michael Benjamin, he has not pre-screened any of these. So you're going to get his honest, real-time reaction. First one here we have from r/Suns user, what you doing? Probably more to the name, I just can't see it. Says, only 30 days till the deadline. You got a meme here of, oh, shoot, Mike, who is that guy? Willem Dafoe. This is Willem Dafoe. Says, Suns fans, October 23rd, 2024. So right when the season started, he's looking real sharp with the short shorts and the Adidas, little red beanie on, clean shaven. Next frame, Suns fans, January 6th, 2025. Looks like he's dressed like a real raggedy sailor, down on his down on his time a little bit, with a full scraggly beard. Mike, is this kind of sum up how you felt throughout the season?
The Green Goblin not loving life right now. Yes, Chris, life comes at you fast, as they would say. I mean, if you think about it, the last time we were here on Pass the Outlet and we did our predictions for the 2024-2025 season, we were both very, very confident that this Phoenix Suns team was going to win over 50 games and be one of the top three seeds in the Western Conference. And that's what a lot of people were feeding us. And that's what it seemed to be built to be, if you want to say that, right? The different pieces that were brought in, you re-sign Royce O'Neal, you sure up Grayson Allen for the future, you get a little bit bigger and a little bit better at the big man position at the time that you thought with Mason Plumlee, you bring in the point guard, which was the absolute need after last year with the consistent turnovers, the inability to control the ball down the stretch, especially when the Phoenix Suns struggled in those fourth quarters late. But I don't know, man. It hasn't been more the same. It just seems like, okay, I'll say this. There are some factors and facets that are more the same. Phoenix Suns can't get a damn rebound ever, right? We're too small. The second chance opportunities, you can see it from that Atlanta Hawks game that happened the other day. And like yesterday, talk about it. Cleveland Cavaliers, 15 offensive rebounds comparative to the Suns, 1 offensive rebounds. You're not going to win games like that. Granted, Cleveland Cavaliers could be the best team in the NBA as a whole right now. I think they're 35-6 or something like that. But we are past the halfway point, officially past the halfway point, 42 games in. And this is how you feel. And I don't know about you, man. Even with all the rumors of Jimmy Butler and the moves that we have made, they're all so minuscule to what you're seeing on the court on a consistent basis that I don't know if there's any one move that can put us back to October 23rd, Willem Dafoe, at the end of the day right now. It might get a little bit better. We might shave our beard off, you know, but we're still going to have bags under our eyes. And at the end of the day, if we even can be limping into the play-in, and it's just, it's going to be a tough road ahead from there.
Yeah. I mean, man, you really summed it up. I can't say that I've spoken with a fellow Suns fan who is optimistic about the future of this team, at least as it pertains to this season. It's just hard, man. Like, I don't think there is any one move that can save us. And it's like, I can't even get excited about the prospect of adding Jimmy Butler to this team because I don't know if it makes us any better. And that's tough because, you know, fans, they're hungry for change. But I think that's also been the crux and how we kind of get to this point is we've made a lot of moves. And you got to start asking the question at a certain point is, have we made too many moves? I don't know. And as we kind of talk about where this team goes from here and what do you do with the current makeup of this roster, again, I promise, Mike, these aren't all going to be doom and gloom, but thought this one was pretty funny. This is also from r/Suns user. I'm not going to say that. He said, sums up my mood with this team right now. Top frame, another loss. And it's, I believe that's Brittany Broski. My wife's a fan. So if you were wondering how I know that, she's kind of making, also known as Kombucha Girl, if anyone else is chronically online as I am.
Kombucha Girl.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Kombucha Girl. Pretty sure. But she's making a stink face. It says another Suns lost. And then next frame is her kind of like a little bit of a more optimistic, like maybe this ain't so bad. And the frame says one step closer to ending the big three experiment. So Mike, are fans over it? Are they over? Is it just Bradley Beal that they're over, or is it like the whole package?
That's a great question, man. I think that a lot of the fan base is kind of split because I think a lot of the people just think that Bradley Beal is the weakest link in regard to that big three. Having Devin Booker and Kevin Durant as that kind of mismatch, but then I think some other people are at the same pace where I'm starting to get towards is, unfortunately, they attack the same way, even though they're different sizes, right? They're both mid-range assassins, which is great. But Chris, when I'm sitting there watching that Cleveland Cavaliers game and they're just mid-ranging the Cleveland Cavaliers to death as they're putting up 45 three-pointers and Devin Booker and Kevin Durant are shooting 32% from the field, not even trading threes for twos, you know, you snap your fingers and you blink your eyes before it's a 25-point game. I mean, I was looking at my phone for 5 minutes yesterday, Chris. It was an 8-point game and it went to a 22-point game before I even knew it. So I think a lot of people are just kind of, this was the chance, man. This was the chance to reload, right? I don't know if you can reload again next year, say with these similar three, and think that the differences are going to show once again. We already talked about how you can't reload on the coach, three coaches in 3 years, or technically it'd be four coaches in 4 years at that point. It's just not something that is sustainable for any franchise if you're looking to bring in people who want to be here for a long time, especially if you don't have any draft capital, right? So, yeah, a lot of people I think are still split, but you know where I'm at too. All my homies hate Bradley Beal, man.
Absolutely. And Mike, as one of your homies, I do hate Bradley Beal. And I we're going to get into some like the breaking news and the trade stuff and a lot of rumors as if there weren't enough rumors swirling around this team already. My goodness. I'm seeing rumors. It was a week ago. It was Bradley Beal isn't going to waive his no trade clause. Today, it's Bradley Beal is probably going to waive his no trade clause. But I think the truth of the matter is that nobody really has any idea what the hell going on. Even our figurehead GM, James Jones, probably has no idea what's going on because Matt Ishbia and Isaiah Thomas are behind closed doors making calls and pulling strings. It's a crazy time to be a Suns fan. I would still take this era of Suns basketball over the Eric Bledsoe days of Suns basketball any day, but it's tough. It's really tough to have such high expectations. And you know, speaking of that, I was talking with a friend of the show, Ian Kruver, and he is an avid Brooklyn Nets fan. So he is very familiar with Kevin Durant for one, and also a big three experiment for two, as he got to see the failure of Kyrie, James Harden, and Kevin Durant. And the problem there, people thought, was that they just weren't on the court enough together. They weren't able to build chemistry. They were never healthy at the same time. Well, now, not only are we running into that a little bit with our big three, but when they are all on the court together, it doesn't translate into barn burner basketball. We are keeping pace with mediocre teams. If you're so good, if this is your star big three that you're paying $40 million plus each, then you need to beat the mediocre teams by 20, 30 points. And it's not even a question. But when you're barely scratching out 4 or 5 point wins over the Pistons, I know they're better than last year, but they're still the Pistons. I don't know, man. It's tough. Yeah, the era is aging out. I mean, we're about to see LeBron retire, about to see Kevin Durant retire. Even guys that I wouldn't think are that old are getting up there. Like Steph Curry is getting up there. It's going to be a change of the guard, man. And it's a different game. It's a different game. I think the talent is so saturated in the league right now that a player that might be a role player in the current NBA would have probably been a superstar 20 years ago. And it's just how the game's developed, man. It's a new day and age. But I'll hop off my soapbox so we can continue on with the Reddit reacts. Let me see if I can find something a bit more upbeat. No, that's negative. That's negative. Okay, cool. Perfect. Mike, I got this one here, and we did talk about this a little bit, but I want to show this and share this, and then also have a little conversation, ask you a question about it. So I'm going to quit yapping, and let's see here. We have Kevin Durant retweeting an X post or tweet from at Soul Retriever. And it shows a picture of some cleats here. Rashad Bateman has Ravens Nike KD 4 cleats for tonight's game. Look real sharp. First, okay, I guess I have a two-part question, Mike. First, what are your thoughts on this? Is it pretty cool?
Oh, absolutely. Awesome. I love when players take their own spin on some of the classics. And the KD 4 is one of those classic Nike shoes. And a lot of people, if you really ask them, if they were sneakerheads back in those days when they came out, they took the world by storm and they had sneakerheads in a chokehold. So, yes, very clean. Like these.
Excellent. I like them as well. And I know, Mike, you're a big sneakerhead. I think anybody who's returning and watching Valley Sports Plug can see. I mean, anybody can see the wall of shoes behind you. But, you know, this has become a trend in the last 10, 15 years, I feel like, where athletes are taking basketball shoes and converting them to a shoe that fits their sport, whether that's baseball. I don't know about soccer, golf, I've seen it in, but I wanted to ask you if, you know, putting you on the spot, of course, do you have a favorite example of an athlete that has taken a basketball shoe and made it their own, and what sport?
Oh my gosh. I mean, I can always go with the classic, the Air Jordan 1. Our own guy, Arizona's best tight end, Trey McBride, always pulls out the Chicago ones, it seems like, multiple times this year. Oh, man, Chris, you're putting me on the spot. I don't like that, my guy. That's not fair. But, I mean, one thing I will say, I think Jordans transcend over to football a lot. Kobe's have been another big one as well. I'll stay relevant. How about this? And it might pain some people. Oh my goodness. I think Jaden Daniels had a pair of maroon, I think Kobe sixes, just recently in that that quarterfinal matchup against the Detroit Lions. It was so, they were so clean, man. They matched perfectly with their maroon jerseys. And those Kobe sixes, which are, you know, the Grinches, the reverse Grinches, some of the most played in shoes in the NBA and in basketball as a whole. They have those little like speckles on them. So to see those colors twisted into a maroon, which fit perfectly with his jersey. Oh, I was a little jealous that I wasn't able to do something like that, man. But yeah, we'll stick with the modern times since it's fresh in my head. That's what I'll say so far has been my favorite cleats that I've seen from the playoffs so far. How about that?
There you go. I like that. And, no, I totally agree, man. And I did bring one example of a set that I really like. And the thing is, I think that's tough is like a lot of these pro athletes are able to get them custom made. And I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but are they starting to produce some of those kind of crossover? I think you have a pair of baseball cleats that are some retro Jordans.
Yeah, I have those Chicago ones for baseball. I also have a pair of black cement threes that were made by baseball. So they've definitely started to transition into creating some of those, you know, classic silhouettes and colorways into multi-sport usages. So, like, I don't know if you remember, right around Thanksgiving, they had a big drop of the Kobe Grinches, the green ones, and they were football cleats. They were specifically made for football cleats. Oh, wow. If you got your hands on those and you didn't play football and you wanted to turn around, you make a nice little dollar right now. But yeah, that has definitely been a big thing over the years. I think this is kind of a situational story outside of basketball specifically, but it can go right into shoes. Clint Frazier, I think I was talking with you about this the other day. You know, old outfielder from the New York Yankees, was kind of one of the first guys to take hype shoes like the Travis Scott Mocha ones with the reverse swoosh and literally just go to a customizer and say, hey, I want to wear these when I play baseball. So can you just put metal cleats on them? And that really started the wave, probably around 2017, 2018, 2019, those time frames. And now it has really just encapsulated the culture of sports, man. So definitely awesome to see. But I like that, dude. Give Rashad Bateman his props, man, because he knows a good shoe when you see one in the KD4, man. That's an all-time classic.
Yes, sir. And real quick, I don't want to hang up on this topic too much, but I did come with one of my own. I think he was one of the very first golfers to sign with the Jordan brand, Keegan Bradley. And he could have just picked a Nike golf shoe, but if I'm remembering correctly, could be totally making this up, but I think he told Jordan or whoever, like, hey, no, I want to play in some cool looking Jordan kicks. Like, what can we do? And they made him up these golf cleats. Mike, do you know, are these threes? Can you tell?
Oh, I don't know what those are. Those aren't any of the first four. Those aren't any of the first 14. Those might be maybe a 20 or a special, a different special golf shoe just made by Jordan Brand. I will say, the Jordan Brand has definitely been diving more into golf. I don't know if you've heard of this company, but Eastside Golf. It's like an African-American brand that focuses on African-American golfers, and they've partnered and they've been making some really, really awesome stuff with Jordan Brand. And they've been using the ones and they've been doing some of the major silhouettes, but they've also been using like ACG golf type shoes that are really just made for golf and putting their own spin on them. So culture grows, man. That's the awesome thing about shoes still at the same time is that we always know where they're rooted in, man. They're rooted in the history of basketball.
Yeah, no, 100%. I think it's really awesome. And I expect we're going to see a lot of really cool things in the shoe game. And like what you say, Eastside Golf, I'm definitely going to look into that. It's almost golf season for me here in Arizona, which is counter to what you would think, but that's only because it's cheaper and the greens are empty and I can take my time, even though it's 110 degrees outside. But this is a basketball podcast, Mike. We're not here to talk golf. So I got two more for us. I know I don't want this to go too long, but just another fun one. I did have a few more negatives, but I think we just need to end on a light note here. So this last one, it's an age old debate, something that gets talked about frequently, and I'm sure we will talk about it here on Valley Sports Plug again. You got this SpongeBob meme. Don't remember what the villain's name is, but we got Patrick. This is a classic meme format. So in the top, top left, we're going to go through, it says, you know, and I do this, folks. If you're watching on YouTube, you don't need me to narrate this, but we do post this on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere you can find podcasts, you can find Valley Sports Plug and Pass the Outlet. So I'm narrating for you audio listeners. In this meme, it shows in the top left, is Michael Jordan greater than Bill Russell all time? Patrick says, yep. But Bill Russell has more rings than MJ, right? Patrick says, yep. So then it sounds like rings don't make one player better than another. Makes sense to me. So why do you have MJ over LeBron? Rings. Mike, do you want to touch this one?
The age-old debate. I know we've had these conversations in the past. Chris, at this point in time, I'm ready to wave the white flag. I mean, LeBron James is the GOAT. Like, I don't think there's any more comparisons for what he's done, his body of work, for the extended amount of time, for what he still does into his 40s. He's also the NBA all-time career points leader. He's won multiple championships, won multiple MVPs, been on so many different All-Star games, won All-Star game MVPs, won multiple Olympic gold medals. I mean, when he's in his 40s, he is captaining a team with Steph Curry and Kevin Durant to a gold medal against some of the best competition in the world that we've probably seen in the Olympics in the past, I would say, 20 years, man. I mean, the comparison is gone. I would say that I am one of those people, a lot of us are, who are my age, who was blessed to see both perform within their peaks, right? Obviously, I was a little bit younger at being born in 1990, but I vividly remember Michael hitting that game winner over Byron Russell in the 1998 NBA Finals. But I also vividly remember LeBron James leading his team down 3-1 against the Golden State Warriors in an absolute all-time NBA Finals where Kyrie Irving hits the dagger for them to come back and win. LeBron James has started to transcend the game of basketball the same way that Michael Jordan has, and he just has put up more numbers at the end of the day. So if you really want to look at it as a whole, you can even throw in how much of a non-factor he had with bad stuff happening off the court. Like, LeBron James is an overall good person. He's a great leader. Some people didn't like the tactics he used in creating some of his teams. But that comes with the territory, man. When you're one of the best and you are the best, people are going to look at you to what you want at the end of the day. So I'll wave the white flag, Chris. I'll finally hop on the boat. It's LeBron.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I'm glad that you've finally seen the light.
I've seen the light.
Hey, and light is the most perfect and beautiful disinfectant. You know, I get it. I was born in 93. I didn't get to watch MJ growing up. Obviously, I knew the lore, saw the highlights. Once 2K finally worked out that deal, they went all in on MJ for a few years. I remember playing NBA Street when I was younger. He was in that game, and you could have a Jordan from every different era. So I had mad respect for Jordan. And when I was younger, definitely absolutely considered him the GOAT. But throughout my lifetime, and it's crazy that LeBron James has been playing professional basketball the majority of my lifetime. He is him, as the kids would say, man. Like, LeBron has done everything you can ask him to. And I get it, Mike. It's different generations. It's different eras. Was Michael Jordan the best at the time and for his era? Absolutely 100%. But you drop LeBron James into that era, and what do you think he's going to do? And vice versa. I mean, I see a lot of discourse online. People, and it could be unfair. Roman, let me know. Let me know. But a lot of people have said that if you take Michael Jordan and put him in today's game, that he's just a role player. He's just another rotation dude. I'm sure he would be a starter. Obviously, I'm not going to get that disrespectful and say he's a bench warmer or anything like that. But he's just another star in the league. He's not the guy that's putting the team over the hump. What do we got here? Oh, LeBron is the GOAT. Yes, Colin, thank you very much. I'm glad we're all in agreement. Case closed. Debate is over. The old heads will always say LeBron, and that's fine, because I think a lot of that opinion is shrouded in their memories of them being younger and of them witnessing it live firsthand. And I completely get it, and I understand it, and I respect it. But if you dropped an alien in onto Earth, told him to evaluate both bios objectively, it's LeBron every time. And it's every day, LeBron is running away with it. And I don't want to say it's not even close, but it's not as close as a lot of people want to make it seem like it is. But Michael, we're at the, 95 minute mark. So I know I want to let you get out of here, but we teased it. We've talked about it a little bit, so we got to address it. I guess you could call it the elephant in the room, the breaking news that dropped just a few hours before we went live from your boy, Shams Charania. The Phoenix Suns are trading their 2031 unprotected first to the Utah Jazz for 3 first-round picks. Sources tell ESPN the Suns are acquiring the least favorable first in 2025 of Cleveland, Minnesota, 2027 of Cleveland, Minnesota, Utah, and 2029 of Cleveland, Minnesota, Utah. Mike, what the hell does this mean? Can you please explain it to us?
Oh, man, the Phoenix Suns. They're getting draft capital back. They're seeing the writing on the wall. They're going to have to get younger. They're going to bring in some younger talent over the next couple of years, make sure they have the draft pick that they can, you know, stick and pick and develop. Incorrect, Chris. All of this is to make the trade for Jimmy Butler, man. I'm telling you, all of this is just to make the trade for Jimmy Butler. When I first heard the news, what I just said was my first thought process and kind of honestly my hope, because after making the trade for Nick Richards, you already lost a whole bunch more draft capital with sending the 3 second-round picks over to the Charlotte Hornets with Josh Okogie. Yes, you did get one pick back, but we're still missing basically every first-round pick from the Kevin Durant trade. We've moved some more, and now we're stuck with nothing, right? And we're stuck with a team that is in the second apron, making it even harder to pick up guys of leverage that can make a difference for this team. So we have to do things like draft Ryan Dunn, draft Oso Igodoro, and develop those guys and hope that they pan out to be great players, or at least great role players, to get this team where they need to be. But I think the writing is on the wall for this one, man. They made this pick so they can shop these first-round draft picks in front of the Miami Heat to make it more enticing, because even though Jimmy Butler, and I think Brian Windhorst had come out today or yesterday and had said the only place that Jimmy Butler is willing to go at this point is the Phoenix Suns. But Miami needs some kind of capital back. And if Bradley Beal is going to trade his no, or is going to waive his no trade clause, you still got to sweeten the pot, because you just don't know what you're going to get out of Bradley Beal if you're the Miami Heat. And too injury prone, you're going to lose a lot of production in the different ways that Jimmy Butler can bring on the defensive end, as well as rebounding, which Bradley Beal just does not hit those marks anymore, unfortunately. So yeah, I think this is exactly why this trade was picked. It is written weirdly by where it's like 2025 of Cleveland, Minnesota, Utah. So it's basically just whoever has the latest pick is the one that the Suns would get to keep at the end of the day.
Oh, that makes sense. So that's where the least favorable part comes in, where it's like, yes, whatever the worst pick of the bunch is, that's what we get. So pretty much just going to be draft, especially as Cleveland is now very good. They're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be having a late draft pick. That makes a lot of sense. And Mike, with that train of thought you walked us through, perfectly makes sense to me. And honestly, I totally agree. This is signaling to me that there is another move, another shoe that's going to drop. And I believe that Matt Ishbia is frothing at the mouth at the prospect of getting him a Jimmy Butler. He made the mistake with the Beal trade. I think he's eating that, but now he wants to rectify it. Ishbia is a deal maker. He's always going to try and get his team better, and he wants to win now. He doesn't want to win next year. I think if I'm playing devil's advocate, a way you could look at this, and another thought that I've seen online is, if it doesn't work out, so it could be plan A and plan B, we could call it. So plan A, use these draft picks, get Jimmy Butler, go for it. Plan B, if it doesn't work out, you can't strike a deal, trade deadline passes. They're blowing it up, man. They're blowing it up and building for the future. And you might see Kevin Durant be gone. You're definitely not going to be seeing Bradley Beal for too much longer. It's crazy he's already soured his welcome in a season and a half. But then that begs the question, Mike, what are they going to do with Devin Booker? Are they going to sit him down and ask him if he wants to be a part of another rebuild, if he shares their vision, what his thoughts are, or will they grant him the grace of saying, look, we're not going to be good or relevant for the next 2, 3, 5 years, whatever their plan is. Do you let Devin Booker go try and cement his legacy and be on a championship contending team? These are all hypothetical, tough questions that I don't think we have to answer today, but something to chew on, man, because I think with all these moving parts, and I would love to, maybe that'll be my project between now and the next time we do Pass the Outlet. I want to make a list of every move the Suns have made in the last 3 years. And I think it'll be multiple pages. And in my humble opinion, it's been too much movement, not able to build any sort of chemistry or consistency. And a lot of people saying Frank Vogel needs an apology from us, because look at how we're doing now compared to last season. Not too much better.
I love it. Chris Patrick has already set some homework for himself for next time. Chris, yes, please do that. Let's take a trip down memory lane on what the moves have been during the Matt Ishbia era so far. I will say it's not for a lack of trying. Unfortunately, it does not seem like these pieces that have been brought in, they're just not working, right? This is a 500 basketball team. This is a middle of the road basketball team. They have flaws. They have times where they can win games that they should, and they drop games that they shouldn't. And that's what happens when your team is 500. Everything is just a little over the notch here or there. And I don't know if one Jimmy Butler or one Nick Richards or getting rid of a Yusuf Nurkic really changes too much, but I hope it does at the end of the day. Chris, what an awesome episode. I wanted to give another shout out to our guy, Colin McClintic, the Tempe YMCA sports director, for joining us. I think that is our game plan for Pass the Outlet moving forward. We're going to be hitting you once a month with these, man. There's too much to talk in the basketball world, and we're going to be getting more special guests come on and share their story about the world of basketball, man. We just know too many people who live and breathe the game, man, but also work in different places that you just might not realize are out there for not only you, the listener, to work in, but to learn about. And that's what we want to do here at Pass the Outlet. We're here to talk about the game, learn about the game, and have some fun doing it. But Chris, before we go, do you got anything else for the people one last time tonight?
Man, we covered so much, but there's plenty more to talk about. So I'm excited that we're back in 2025 with Pass the Outlet. Like you said, going to be doing it monthly. I also want to thank Colin. It's great having a member of the community, someone doing meaningful work and making a difference. So keep doing what you're doing, Colin. Fully support it. And we'll talk. We'll talk about coaching. I don't know about first and second graders, but we'll talk. But Mike, also want to thank you, brother. Appreciate it. And this was a lot of fun, as always.
Yes. Thank you, Chris, as always. But ladies and gentlemen, this was Pass the Outlet, episode 23. I'm your host, Michael Benjamin. That's my co-host, Chris Patrick. We'll be back next month. We'll be back next week with the Valley Sports Plug Roundtable. We'll have a bunch more of our friends coming on. I'm sure we'll have Colin hop on one of those in the future as well. But appreciate you guys as always. Make sure you follow us at AZ_VSP. Like the video, subscribe to Valley Sports Plug on YouTube. We appreciate you guys as always. We'll see you next time. Peace.
One, two, three, four.
Ball is life, plain and simple. You know, ask any baller. If you know, you know.
The game has changed, but it's still the same. If you want it, go get it.
Shazam!
The inbounds pass comes into Jordan. Here's Michael at the foul line, the shot on Elo.
The Bulls win! They win it!
Mike, you're honestly telling me that you're top five.
Yeah.
Top five of all time.
No question about it.
Booker, this is for the win. Got it. Wow.
Yo. The ruling on the floor is made basket.
You know, one thing's for sure. Over at Valley Sports Plug, you're never going to catch us slipping.
First overall pick, the Phoenix Suns select.
3, 2, 1.